New York Times bestselling author Jane Levy is our guest. She's the author of the new book, Make Me Commissioner. I Know What's Wrong with Baseball and How to Fix It. It is a brand new book and really a journey that she takes us on through the game of baseball, what it has become and what it means to her. It is published by Grand Central, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Jane Levy to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
I'm so glad to be there. If only I was actually in Stockbridge or Lenox or something like that, rather than District of Columbia.
Well, I could ask you a lot about that experience of being in D.C.
Yeah, right now.
But let me stick with the book and ask you what it is that brought you to want to write this in the way that you wrote it, of telling these stories of baseball and your love of this game.
So I really liked being called a baseball biographer, because biographer, if you just delete the baseball, sounds serious and people take you seriously, rather than being called a sports writer, which half the world just writes off. So I really did want to find another subject after Sandy Koufax, Mickey Mantle, and Babe Ruth to join my pantheon of baseball immortals. And what happened was I couldn't find one. When I started looking for guys who either hadn't been written to death, as we like to say in sports writing, or who were interesting enough with whom to spend 8 years, the way I spent with 8 years with Babe, I like to say I spent more time alone with him than both of his wives or either of them put together, both of them put together. So baseball is lacking in stars. They don't know how to create or market the stars that they have. And there is a seeming reluctance to accept the fact that what they lack compared to the NBA and even the NFL is part of the reason people have distanced themselves from the game. And at bottom, what astonished me the most was to come to the realization that analytics have conspired against making those kinds of stars, because analytics have subverted the moments that define stardom. I don't know if we're ever going to see a perfect game ever again in baseball. You can't throw a perfect game if you pitch only 5.2 innings, which was the average for a starting pitcher in baseball last year. You can't pitch a no-hitter if the operative method is to take every pitcher out after he's gone through the batting order, the opposing batting order, twice, because numbers say that when he gets to the third time around, his effectiveness goes down, it plummets. So all of that makes great numerical sense. I don't doubt the truthfulness of the numbers. What I doubt is that the numbers ought to have a controlling interest in how the game is played. And that really troubles me.
You say in the introduction, baseball was on my clock and so was I. Baseball was on the clock and so was I. I made it my mission to see the game in all its iterations in 2023 to gauge the impact of Theo's engineering, Theo Epstein, and gather intelligence on what more needed to be done. And you talk about starting in West Palm Beach and then making your way across these big league ballparks and minor league games and seeing what was going on. Even watching Little League games and T-ball games. It takes a love of the game to want to do that. But I assume also, especially when you have concerns, that really drives you to want to get to the bottom of what the problems are.
I really at bottom want everybody to love it as much as I do. I don't hate baseball. People think maybe because of the title that I'm disgusted with it. Quite the contrary. And the problem is that it took Major League Baseball far too long to act to make reparations to a game that was obviously invented in the 19th century that was trying to keep up with the modern world. There's a woman, Gloria Mark, who was a professor of informatics at in California, who did a book, and she found measuring attention span, and she found that the first time she measured people, they could attend to a computer screen in excess of 3 minutes, right? And when she repeated the experiment again, just before she published her book a couple of years ago, it was down to 47 seconds. So baseball was trying the patience of the modern age. They had to put in the pitch clock. That's been a tremendous success. I'm glad they got rid of the defensive shifts, which meant that you had the people who usually play shortstop and usually play third base swung around into center field or even right field. But it doesn't repair. What it did, let me restate, what it did is it made, according to Buck Showalter, who was only the manager of the year 4 times, he said what it's done is it's made a boring game faster. The texture of the game, the things that defined it, the great moments are all gone. I don't even look up when there's a home run anymore because there's so many of them. A third of the all at-bats ends with what's called the three true outcomes, a home run, a strikeout, gosh, I could possibly have forgotten the third true outcome. I think I did. Oh, wait a minute. I got to Google it. It was created by Christina Carl, who is now the sports editor of San Francisco Chronicle. She was one of the founders of Baseball Prospectus, and she is now recanted. She just thinks that it's all gone too far. A home run, a walk. I knew there was something else, and a strikeout. So the numbers show that that's a much more efficient way to win. But efficiency isn't fun. Efficiency doesn't entertain. And in every place that baseball has had a choice in recent years to entertain and to accept that that is part of its job, you know, that you're not just there to hit home runs. You're not just there to, you know, take a moment, center yourself, call a timeout and say, okay, this is how I'm going to approach this at bat, which players are coached to do now. I'm there to make this theater. And you can't make theater if the rules prevent it. And that's what's happened. Rich Hill, who I'm sure you know, mm-hmm. is a Massachusetts guy yep. who just played for he's 45 years old, and he just pitched for his 14th major league team. Told me about one of the many go-arounds with the Red Sox, I think it was his fourth, where he used to step off the pitching rubber at a moment of drama in order to milk it for the crowd, let the tension build, you know, make people feel a little bit of what it feels like to be on the mound. And he approached his pitching as an art. He would look at it as the strike zone as a canvas, and he'd say, well, you know, it needs a little bit more red over here. And that is a completely different ethos and aesthetic than efficiency. Efficiency may work, but it's boring. And people turned away from baseball in droves because it became boring, and it was the antithesis of the fast, back and forth sports, which is what my mentor, Red Smith, used to refer to as basketball and football and hockey. So in Jane, and they need to grow a new generation of fans, because the old people like me I'm not dead yet, but I will get there sometime. And they need kids to replace people like me. So in Jane's MLB, the first thing that happens, kids 10 and under get in free. There are swaths of open, empty seats in every ballpark. Baseball has an inventory of games and seats that they can't fill right now. So imagine not just the PR coup of announcing, you know, we've thought about it, and we really do want kids in the ballpark. So we're going to make it easier because we know it's gotten really expensive. So if grandpa or dad or grandma or mom or whoever brings a 10-year-old to a ball game, you know, the kid gets a free seat. And you know what's going to happen? I do, because I had an economist check it. Grandpa or mom or dad is going to buy that kid a hot dog and a soda and maybe cotton candy and a hat. And it's not going to end up costing that team much money. My economist pal at the University of Wisconsin ran down the numbers for the 2023 Cubs. If they had done that in 2023, it would have cost the Cubs all of $4 million. Now, that's not bupkis, as they would have said in my grandmother's Bronx parlor, but it's chump change to Major League Baseball owners. And that same year, the Cubs paid Jason Hayward $21 million to play for the Los Angeles Dodgers. So there are things that they can do, daring things that can be done to reconfigure how baseball is perceived and who wants to see it.
It seems that in my experience, I'm a Phillies fan and root for that team. I love that team and grew up with that team and have the stories that so many do of what it's like to be a fan of a team in a major city. I have to say that the most exciting moments that I have come during spring training and watching and being in a ballpark in Clearwater, Florida, and watching that team get ready. And the fanatic is there and the fans are there. The players are more accessible. The fans are closer to the action. And there's certainly issues there of things that are odd about the way we run a preseason game, but man, they're a lot of fun.
Yeah, and it gives you a sense of the intimacy, the kind of relationship people used to have with their ball club. One of the things, I mean, Major League Baseball has done a lot of research. And they've made, you know, some significant strides. I got to give them their props. But they have research that shows that baseball fans are created younger than a football or a basketball fan is created. So you got to get them when they're kids. That's part of the reason that I feel so strongly about letting kids 10 and under in. But there are other things that they can do. Do you happen to remember when baseball players like Mickey Mantle conducted clinics down on the field before games? Where did they go? Do you remember when Ebbets Field and Griffith Stadium and Forbes Field had a whole section dedicated to kids where kids got in free, you know, pretty much of any age, one day a week? And they had purchased on a section of the ballpark that was theirs. And that's what you've got to give these guys. You know, you got to let them feel the dirt. You got to let them feel the grass and look up and see how big these places are and try to imagine themselves in it if you want to create new baseball players.
Create new baseball players and create new baseball fans, right? Because this is all fragile. This can go away.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And one of the tragedies and ironies is that baseball has become, for kids, a country club sport. It, you know, Little League is I don't want to say it's a joke, but it's for people like me. I played Little League back when girls were not really welcome, so I, you know, could mop up when the score was 19-0 or before they, imposed the rule that said that the score is too bad, you can't come out anymore. And I didn't get a whole uniform. I only got a hat from the Roslyn Long Island Blue Jays. But Little League is for chumps now. You know, now you have to play travel ball.
Right.
And you have to go to showcases sponsored by Perfect Game or their many competitors. And it's become the most expensive of the three most popular youth sports. It's over $1,000. It's grown 46%, I think, in 3 years. And, you know, how is that compatible with being the American pastime? It's not. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Did baseball do that or did parents do that? Because at some point when they said, okay, we're going to make you take your kid and we're going to go 300 miles away from your home to play a game that we could play in your backyard, and we're going to put you up in hotels that cost $249 a night, and people said, okay.
They're not putting them up in hotels that cost $249. The parents are
paying
for that kind of stuff.
That's what I mean. I mean, the competitions are, those are moneymakers. And I'm just, is that, I'm just wondering, is it baseball that's responsible for that? Is it parents? Because it certainly goes across not just baseball, but other sports as well, where these become this travel ball that becomes something that kids, you know, now you have to, they need personal assistance to keep track of their schedules.
I'm volunteering. the answer, Joe, is parents created it. Several of the coaches I spoke to, one of them, Marquise Grissom, who has his own academy and was, of course, an all-star for the Braves for a long time and is a wonderful guy and is trying to help repair the lack of baseball in black communities. You know, he said, parents got to quit drinking the Kool-Aid. They all think, okay, if I take my kid, and this is what makes Perfect Game successful. If I take my kid to one more showcase, you know, he's going to get seen by one more scout. And that one more scout is going to file a report and he's going to have a big web page on Perfect Game and pro scouts are going to see him. So parents created it along with the guys who created Perfect Game at all. But Major League Baseball has tolerated it and it has encouraged it. And one of the things that they are talking about doing, which I fully think is, you know, it's timely to say the least, is blocking out times of year when Major League scouts may not go to those showcases. And that's partly to discourage the process. It's also to try to protect young pitching arms. Because if there is a showcase and there's a Major League scout, kids are there. And they're going to try to throw 95 miles an hour. The number of them who are doing it now at that age and then having Tommy John surgery before they get drafted, you know, is enormous. So take the support away from that system. There are ways to do that. And it starts with removing the scouts.
If you were commissioner, and I like the sounds of this, by the way, if you were commissioner, how long do you think it would take to change the nature of things and change a culture that has now been pretty embedded for decades and change it so that people and fans and the affordability and all of these issues that we've been talking about are maybe not solved, but at least addressed in a meaningful way?
Well, it depends on how punitive you're willing to be. It's not a quick fix, for example, in the black community. Tony Regan's long-term Angels general manager took on the task of trying to rebuild programs in black communities. And he said when he took the job in 2016 or so, he thought it was a 5-year fix. And by the time we sat down to talk, he was maybe 15 or 20 years. Yeah. None of this is going to be fast. And nor should anybody expect that the baseball is going to regain its preeminence as the national pastime. Nothing can be the national pastime exclusively because seasons now overlap. Baseball used to have the summer to itself, and it doesn't anymore. It has to share it with preseason football and the end of the NBA playoffs. So it's not the same sports landscape. However, there are things that they can do that would call attention to their intention to change. Another one is, because I think the destruction of pitching arms is not just unhealthy and unfair to the guys who are throwing max heave 100 miles an hour every time they, you know, launch a ball from the mound. It's also unfair and unhealthy for the game. You can't root for guys who aren't there. And too many times, the pitchers that you wanted to go out and see, the matchups that used to exist, don't exist anymore. They've taken away things to root for. So in Jane's MLB, we're going to have a bigger pitching staff, albeit one in which you can only use 11 pitchers each day. And we're going to have a healthy scratch list, just as in hockey. So why should yesterday's starting pitcher be on your roster among the 13 they're now allowed to have? You know you're not going to use them the next day. Every relief pitcher is dead practically by the end of July, and they're all scurrying around and searching the waiver wire to pick somebody up, and they throw them one time, and they find out why the other team released them. So so you take your two tiredest guys, let them sit out a couple of days, and also you're not pitching 2 days in a row. With the extra number of arms, that is possible, and that includes warming up, because warming up in a major league bullpen to go in and then not getting the call. You know, Steve Howe, the late Steve Howe, who was one of the great speedsters back in the day, told Buck Showalter, "You're killing me. You're killing my arm. I can't keep doing this. Up, down, up, down, up, down." They have a very earthy way of describing those throws in the bullpen that don't end up in being an actual appearance on the field. They're called dry humps, which is typical baseball crudity, but sort of a charming crudity for describing the dilemma of getting a guy hot and then not using him. Those pitches are just as taxing on your arm as the ones that you throw from the mound. So no pitching 2 days in a row, and any manager who takes a pitcher out of a perfect game after seven perfect innings loses his challenges. I don't remember, honestly, where I settled on this. I started with for 10 games. I may have been bullied into reducing that to 5 games. But when I told that to Dave Roberts, the Dodger manager, who famously took Clayton Kershaw out of a perfect game after 7 innings, and Rich Hill also, and then Tony Gonsolin, he said to me, "That's fair."
What do you think of, final question, but at this point in the season, as we're ending September and we're going into the playoffs, do you feel that you're still a fully engaged fan that's enjoying the game on a regular basis?
I'm hopeless, Joe. Yes.
Yeah.
I watch baseball every night. I watch baseball on my handheld device on game day when I can't get access to a game because it's blacked out, because they still do that to fans. I was in Massachusetts for all of August. I tried to watch the Yankees and the Red Sox. I have so many subscriptions to so many services, I could not watch the game.
No,
at Fenway Park or Yankee Stadium. I mean, that is insane, and it infuriates people. I mean, I understand why they're dividing up packages among platforms. There's money in it. Yeah, I get it. But make baseball findable. You just can't find it anymore. I'm not saying go back to WPIX, which I watched as a kid growing up on Long Island, but, you know, there's got to be a system that, one, makes games available to people who want to watch them, and two, that allows you, if you're going to put them all over the dial and all over and streaming in every different possible configuration, at least make it easy to find out where they are.
That's right.
It's like, I mean, I'm not great on tech, Joe. I admit it. But, you know, this was, I had 5 people in the house trying to figure this out. We couldn't.
No, I mean, the Phillies are playing the Mets and this week. I want to watch the game. I can see it where I live if I watch it on traditional cable. through the coverage on of the Mets. But if I want to see with all of those, this is why I laughed at your point, because of all of the subscriptions that I have, I can't listen to the Phillies announcers because it's blacked out.
And isn't that something else? You know, again, the individual personality of a team, both in the voices that represented it and in the style of baseball they played, is another thing that has been sacrificed to modernity. And I find that troubling. Remember when there were teams that were built on speed? The Cardinals, how about the Kansas City Royals in 2015 with their three great power relievers at the end of the game? You know, now roster construction and batting order construction is virtually same everywhere. And there's something else that I hope isn't too tortured, but you may know Pekka Hosoi, who's a professor of everything I don't understand in the world at MIT, and she created the sports analytics lab for them. And she said baseball is a canary in the coal mine. You know, the extent to which it threw in with analytics and relinquished what players now call the human element, the prerogative of experience and wisdom and your eyes to sense what should be done and the times when the analytics should not apply. The great catcher for Kershaw, A.J. Ellis, called it situational dexterity. There is no situational dexterity anymore. And Pekka said, look at baseball. This is what's happening throughout our world, even if in modes and industries that we don't suspect it. And she said, you know, we've lost the ability to insist upon the human being making the decision. And that's bad, because the people who are creating the algorithms that run baseball are the same kind of guys who are creating the algorithms that run publishing, for example. And they're very good at it. They're really smart, but they don't have what's called domain knowledge. They don't know the particulars of the industry in which that they're creating algorithms for. And she said, and the worst thing is they don't think it matters. Mm. And it matters a lot. If you don't know the context, how can you make something that's relevant? Two outs in the ninth, and who are you going to send up to hit?
Jane Levy is the author of the New York Times bestseller, Sandy Koufax. The new book is Make Me Commissioner, I Know What's Wrong with Baseball and How to Fix It, which she certainly has illustrated over our conversation this morning. Jane, I thank you so much for being with us. I wish you all the best in your quest to become commissioner, and I thank you very much for sharing with us this morning.
All I want to know is, do I have your vote?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, as long as I got your vote, Joe, I'm a happy girl.
All right, Jane, thank you very much. Be well.
Take good care, and thank you.
Thank you. Again, the name of the new book, Make Me Commissioner, I Know What's Wrong with Baseball and How to Fix It. The book is published by Grand Central. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.